Welcome to the Building Our Future podcast with me, Bert Broadhead. Today, we're exploring the growing world of alternative finance by looking into peer-to-peer lending. Amidst the backdrop of P2P uncertainty with the collapse of Lendi, does this form of financing still have a role to play in stimulating growth and innovation in the built environment? I met with the founder of one of the UK's fastest-growing specialist P2P lenders. Find out more. My guest today is Mike Bristow, CEO and co-founder of Crowd Property, a specialist property peer-to-peer lending platform facilitating loans between private individuals and UK professional property businesses. Lending is focused on the SME property developer market, a key segment for supplying much-needed UK housing stock, which Mike believes is poorly and inefficiently served by traditional funding sources. Mike, big welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Great to be here.
It's lovely to have you here. So I think we're all probably aware of what peer-to-peer is. Quite a lot of negativity in the press at the moment with the likes of Lendi, Funding Circle, etc. What differentiates what you are up to?
I guess where if you sort of step back, right back to, you know, what, how did we found as a business? Where did we come from? Why do we exist? And I think that's where that's a good place to start usually. And those stories are always better when there's sort of the founders have experienced the fundamental pain associated that they're trying to solve. And we, as a founding team, between three of us have 75 years or had 75 years experience then of investing and developing property. And on an SME level, so personally doing it. And we felt that, as the introduction said, that traditional sources of capital just did not serve that market. And that not serving that market is in many, many different respects, from speed and efficiency through to property expertise and really understanding the vision of that property developer, say, of what they're trying to achieve. And so we said, right, that market's broken. We think we understand the fundamental needs and pains of those SME developers better than traditional lenders.
The sources that exist at the moment for SMEs, and we're talking kind of residential here, is effectively you need some form of equity, which, you know, has to come, I guess, through their balance sheet or personal wealth. And then third-party debt. And at the moment, that seems to be kind of high streets, or has always been traditionally, or be that's kind of now expanded a little bit. But is there what's the kind of cutoff limit for size that they will go down to meet that?
At the very sort of, you know, base principles of efficiency, you know, large lenders like bigger deals. So banks have a preference for larger property development deals, because there's quite a lot of effort to go into, understand 100%. Both the analytics and the qualitative factors associated with a deal. So therefore, there's a bias towards larger loan sizes. And, you know, a bank may traditionally say, right, I am going to focus on, you know, developers who have been developing for many, many years, you know, 10, 20, 30 mil plus projects, and they're doing the same and they're growing a little bit or whatever, we can fund a little bit more. But, you know, it's easier for us to understand that. But underlying all of that, so the sources are basically there's bank lenders and there's non-bank lenders, and within non-bank lenders there's a spectrum of lots of different players, and you know that could be small bridging companies, it could be specialist development companies, and then there's the emerging sort of alternative finance sector. And the sort of the capital stack goes as the senior debt, first charge secured against assets. Then there may be some mezz as well, so high risk first loss debt. And then there's the equity tranche as well. And, you know, when perfectly rationally, if one doesn't understand fully what one is lending to, then, you know, so for a bank, mate, you know, there's a nuanced air rights modular development somewhere, and, you know, it's quite complex and you need deep expertise. Then a bank without that deep expertise of those current market trends may say, I'm actually going to lend you less and I'm going to charge you more. That's rational. That's totally rational. Whereas we work on the other way around and we say, let's understand it fully so we can put together a great debt package. And we sit in the senior position, so first charge only debt. And we're very much sort of stretch senior finance. So quite often our developers won't need the mezz piece, that they'll just need the equity top up. And that doesn't mean that we're pushing money out the door. You're only a lender if you're getting the money back in. Otherwise, you're a charity without a cause. We just work very, very hard to understand all the risks associated with that. And that's from personal hands-on expertise of, right, what happens when you put the spade in the ground? What happens when, you know, you've got to solve your pre-commencements? What happens when there's an issue with utility provision onto that site? And, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And if you can understand practically and all implications around that, then you can de-risk that lending from expertise rather than from lending less and charging more.
Fine. So you are using experience, property expertise, and combining that with a tech platform to effectively syndicate down that expertise at a kind of understood risk reward cost.
Very much so. And what we do, we throw a lot of tech analysis. So firstly, you know, we've got a purpose built platform for doing exactly what we do.
Yeah.
You know, and you start on the property bit, so best data, best analytics, and very, very quickly and efficiently served up. Okay. Two expert human brains that then interpret that, build a relationship with the developer to understand capabilities and motivations of executing on that project. And you're combining those two elements incredibly efficiently in a purpose-built model. And where, you know, in every market, incumbent suppliers, you know, struggle because you know, they may be lending across, you know, banks will lend across many, many different asset classes and types and whatever. And they actually have quite an expensive fixed cost base. And that basically takes up the gap between what the money is lent out at and what savers are given in their savings account. Now, peer-to-peer lending is not a savings product. It's an investment product. It's capital at risk. It's not FSCS covered. But the purpose-built system is a lot leaner on fixed cost. And what that means, it can deliver a better deal to lenders and a better deal to borrowers.
And so why is the retail market, by that I mean effectively man on the street, the best source of capital for what you're doing? So why couldn't you alternatively go and find, you know, a traditional fund backer and run effectively the same platform?
So we started solving the pain on the borrower side, and then we said, so we came from that asset expertise background, yeah, which not everyone does in this market. You know, we're not a peer-to-peer lender. We're a development lender with that expertise, where one of our sources of capital and our primary source of capital is retail. Because we're a natural disruptor in the market, and we like to give a better deal to borrowers and a better deal to lenders. And, you know, there's pain on the lender side, the retail lender side, that says, well, actually, if I'm putting my £1 of savings or investments, let's call it investments, then actually there might be an IFA advising it. There might be a fund looking after it. That fund might then go and find a property fund. That property fund will then find a broker. That broker will then find some development deals. And suddenly there's loads of cost and profit in that value chain. And who are the guys that lose? It's the retail lenders at the end of the day. So we wanted to solve both those pains on both those sides of the marketplace. And that built a better business.
So for the investor, it's effectively just direct access to better yield without a load of middlemen in
exactly,
the industry.
Exactly.
Has the recent spate of news about peer-to-peer affected what you're doing?
Not affecting. So we've been lending now for 5.5 years, and we've got a 100% capital and interest payback track record. So we are very, very careful and very, very good at analysing projects and backing projects. And so we've built a great trusted brand, and our lenders who have been with us for some time, they have backed us and our decision-making, seen our success. Lenders elsewhere in the market in peer-to-peer lending, they are asking better and better questions as the sector matures. And they're expecting better and better things. They're expecting transparency of performance. They're expecting transparency of economics. They're expecting operating best practices and external third-party verification of your performance and all of those things. And we've worked very, very hard at building all of those into a world-class operation. And so actually it hasn't affected us that much because we're doing this damn well. And we're working very, very hard at doing it damn well. And in any market, especially maturing markets, there's a spectrum of operating best practices. And, you know, our purposeful strategy is to operate at the very best operating practice. And that has meant, actually, we're seeing a lot more people join us because on the lending side, because they're seeing that track record, that verification, that transparency, that expertise, and an understanding to look for that as well.
In terms of just balance, do you act as a pure intermediary platform, or are you do you have skin in the game on the loan side?
It's a pure marketplace, independent marketplace. It's never our own projects. It's independent projects, it's independent lenders, and the lenders there are bearing the risk of that capital, and we make that very clear.
But for people who are new to the concept of lending through a platform like this, what's your kind of sales pitch to bridge that confidence gap and let them know that this is being done kind of professionally and the loans are being properly underwritten? And to the extent that they're doing the due diligence by reading the materials you're producing, transparent and legit.
We obviously articulate our proposition, and that's written by us. You know, the good thing is that we have gone out there and said, right, there are operating practices defined by the Peer-to-Peer Finance Association, which is the leading sort of body of peer-to-peer finance in the UK and arguably the world, actually, because the UK is very strongly positioned globally for peer-to-peer lending. And they expect you to operate in very, very particular ways. And we were elected to that board on the basis that we operate like that. Then various independent bodies, commentators and analysts, have seen every single loan cash flow in our book. And we've opened that up entirely. And so they can then conclude. And they will validate numbers and performance, which is all historical. And then there are various independent commentators that will look at historical performance, but also work really hard. And there's one reviewer called Fourth Way, which is a great commentator on the market, that really looks into those numbers, but also really probes into the expertise in the business and the sort of strategy of that business and putting best resources in and all of these things. And I think Neil Fortner from Fourth Way said one quote that he's quite a conservative chap. He's very thorough, and I was very pleased in his report. He said, "I firmly believe these guys are fanatical about quality," which I didn't expect something that strong. So
on the website,
On their open website.
Are you quoting that on yours? Straight up.
Actually, not. We don't quote it on our website. That's an interesting point. We've shared that review on social media and things. So, but the good thing is there are people out there now, as you know, again, as the sector matures, there are people out there looking at these businesses and providing resource for people, for retail lenders, whether new or old in the market, to really research these businesses now, which is such an important part of the ecosystem.
And I guess it's been since peer-to-peer really started to emerge, we're yet to see a proper house price correction. You can argue that there's been a drop-off in areas, but we haven't seen a proper downturn. In the event that you do start to have sponsors, developers defaulting on their loans, what is the remedy for the lenders?
Well, first and foremost, I mean, the lender's capital is at risk. So, that's clear. And there are two elements of that. There's the accrued interest in the development and there's the capital originally. What we do, we've done a big, big analytical exercise on stress testing our book historically. So our current book about, right, what if all of the market activities and conclusions from 89-90 happen again? What if 07-08 happens again? and our most bearish scenario was it drops like 07-08, okay, and then it doesn't recover. It took 80 months or so to recover on average in the UK, but on a micro location basis, based on where those loans are, what if it drops like it does 07-08 and then stays at that bottom? How does, you know, how long does our loan book retain that capital element? We've got very good results in that, and that stress test analysis also goes into every loan that we grant. Then what you need to believe in the platform that you might lend through is that, well, if stuff goes wrong, can they recover it?
Right.
And can they recover it well? Okay. And we've had, so the FCA technical default definition is in property is a loan that goes 180 days late. We've had three in our history that have gone over 180 days late. One of those we've taken through full repossession and sale. You know, we know how to do that. And in all of those instances, we recovered every bit of capital and every bit of interest accrued. So, you know, that's another thing that, you know, it's really good for people to understand exactly that. What happens when it goes wrong? And have you done that before?
In some ways, quite useful that it has happened.
Yes. I mean, very useful and good outturn as well. And that's actually really where two things come into play that are very important. Firstly, the asset expertise. And secondly, the relationship with that borrower. And we work very, very hard to build a close partnership type relationship. We always act in the best interests of the lenders. That is what a platform needs to do. But we will work very closely, and we will be proactive. You know, we will be a sounding board. If there's a challenge on site, they'll often ask us, "Hey guys, what have you done in this situation before, or whatever?" And again, that goes back to the expertise. So if you've got that open dialogue and that partnership type attitude, you know, tech doesn't deliver that. Okay, and that's why, very importantly, we're a tech and expertise business. So all of those things sort of come together that says, look, you know, we are relentlessly committed to our track record, and you know, that is paramount, and we are doing everything we do internally within the business and resourcing so that we can get those insights and we can mitigate those risks through the journey.
So do you think crowdfunding peer-to-peer is appropriate for other forms of capital, or are you committed to remaining within the senior element?
I think there's a space, definitely, because, you know, all of those, the you know, our senior is stretched senior, so it's reducing some MES requirement. There is some space in equity and in property, I think. You know, however, the crucial thing that needs to be understood by a retail crowd is what is the increased risk as a result of that. And, you know, when we set this business up, we talked about all of these different sort of models and where we should sit. And it was actually quite obvious to us to sit in the stretch senior space. And, you know, especially going out to retail, and we can be very clear about risks. And, you know, we can be very clear that if stuff goes wrong, we have headspace on their capital and their interest. And we're much more comfortable in that space.
And I suppose it also ties in with governance, which I think gets more complicated up the towards the top of the capital stack. But how do you control rights passed around? So if you invest in a loan and it does default, are there then automatic rights where you're in control of what the kind of earnout and the recovery of capital in accrued interest?
Exactly. So we are agent to the first charge on behalf of the lenders. We take the responsibility to act in the best interest of the lenders based on our expertise to do the most effective recovery actions to ensure that's right. And that we make very clear. It's like, you know, guys, we will handle this. We have handled this. We have handled it successfully, and we will do going forward. You know, that is again what to look for in the platform. It's you know, where things go wrong, and those guys are going to get stuck in and know what they're doing and find the best outcome, whatever that outcome is.
trade-off on platforms which do offer you more control and voting rights or whatever it might be is all your other investors have got control and voting rights, which may not always be a good thing. Yeah. So
exactly. Just on control, that's really important because the first charge senior debt holder controls the show. And that's really important. You know, if you're sat junior to that, then is, you know, is that first charge, you know, are those motivations the same for that first charge holder? You know, we control all of that. We take the lead. And that's the right place to be.
Your background is wider property, but also you've been in prop tech kind of investment for pretty much since the beginning. So yeah. An early investor in Pi Labs. Mm. Yeah. So I guess the first question is why of all the things you looked at did this form of lending appeal?
My sort of prop tech journey sort of started before I think prop and tech were put together as a term. So I'd been investing in real estate since 2002, building quite a reasonable sized portfolio, and just got frustrated, you know, endlessly at the opportunity that tech must be able to deliver in a, you know, generally, well, the world's largest asset class that is inefficiently managed. You know, there must be better ways of doing it. So I invested very early on, both direct in a load of prop tech businesses, also through the Pi Labs fund, as you mentioned, so I'm an LP in those funds. And saw some awesome things, you know, really, really incredible businesses. You know, the ones that are popping at the moment are businesses like Air Sorted, Hubble, Ask Porter more recently, is a great business. And, you know, I felt, you know, so I saw a lot of those, but where I always came back to in terms of fundamental pain, you know, it was just so glaring in funding for property. And, you know, it's more recent than that, but it was quite obvious to conclude that, you know, we need to build more houses, you know, no insight there. But, and the two biggest constraints being the planning system, well, I'm not going to get stuck into that, and funding. For good property projects, and that's a big market, and we're not building enough. It increases, you know, it's a very good way of driving up spend in the economy on materials, labor, services, etc. And you know, there's some big picture things to crack there, and that's why I said, right, yeah, the funding side and crowd property was exactly the space to move into in terms of my dedication, and then I will have other investments in prop tech businesses.
There's a much wider, I suppose, government-supported push to support the SME house building industry, in line with the target to try and build 300,000 new homes a year. Do you kind of feel that support that, you know, as someone who can say that they are contributing to SME house builder growth, do you feel kind of external support, or are you fighting a lone battle?
There are various initiatives, definitely. We think they definitely could be better. We see a lot of the market now. You know, we're getting our run rate of applications direct into our website. It's about £1.7 billion. So we're seeing quite a lot of the development market coming into our platform. We think that given the fact we're assessing that efficiently, we're really serving SME needs, you know, really, really well and efficiently, and we're helping those developers get better deals by speed and certainty and all of these sort of good things that generally get better deals. So, you know, we'd like to see more, you know, backing coming our way, clearly, because we could distribute it very well and very efficiently. And, you know, we're working on various things, but I think, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, there's a pot of £1 billion to you know, to distribute.
Yeah.
But how does that get distributed? How does that get allocated? Well, you've got to have people, you know, on the ground finding the projects or originating the projects for that to be distributed most effectively. And that's one of the things we're damn good at doing.
You mentioned the two key barriers to SME growth in the sector, one being access to capital and the other being planning. Mm. From your position, are there other interesting technology platforms that you've seen or are partnering with who are addressing other parts of the problems?
It's insight from, well, a business called Land Insight is good for making it easier to get a view or confidence around what could be possible on a site. You know, that's good. Yep. Because if you shortcut that due diligence process that a borrower needs to go through, then, well, that site's probably more likely to be progressed. And that's a good thing. Better data in the market, businesses like Realize. I think that's strong data.
Development intelligence, another one.
Yep, indeed. And you know, a few years ago, I got a little bit frustrated in PropTech market where I saw a million different propositions that not a million. I'm exaggerating a bit, but a load of propositions that were solving a micro issue in an estate agency. Yes. That assumed they could just plant another platform into that, you know, not worry about the change management and the sales process and the adoption level and all of this. And, you know, and then suddenly, you know, the theory then is, well, they end up with 20 different platforms. That's not going to work. It's getting better at sort of the harmonization of some of those systems and building them into single or incumbent systems in agencies. And that's just one example in quite a specific sort of agent place. But, the broad reaching of PropTech is going wider and wider. I think one of the really interesting spaces we'll see going forward is construction technology. And I'm not talking modular. I'm talking about, you know, full range, so site specification management, modeling out everything. It's sort of BIM on turbocharge, yep. and
bullet points on the BIM. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's physical site stuff as well, just to make the whole thing more efficient. I think that's a really interesting space.
PIM is the new one that's being talked about.
Right.
The planning information model, which comes before the BIM.
Yes. Yeah.
Presumably, when it kind of seamlessly transition from kind of conceptualizing an asset to delivering it and handing it over to the operator, that's going to be pretty great.
And that's actually a really important point of the whole efficiency as well. You know, those handoff points through the entire value chain, from literally from planning consultant through to regulatory sign-off of the end product. You know, how many handoffs do you have in all of that? You know, single integration platforms that could do that. That's, you know, things are moving that way. Some of the largest developers are gaining significant scale advantages through that, and that will trickle down. And you know, one of the things we think about a lot is this SME developer focus. To get to 300,000 houses a year, which we haven't done for decades, and the large sites are getting built out. You know, so actually, smaller sites done by smaller developers are much more important to delivering that housing supply as the bigger stuff gets built out. So SME developers are critical for the future house building in this market.
Yeah, especially if you want to maintain or I should say improve quality.
Mm. Yes.
Both architecturally and kind of built design. It's 300,000 is a huge number.
It's a lot.
It's a small city every year. And trying to do it at scale is incredibly difficult. So yeah, the more SMEs that can come in and add their own thing just seems to be an obvious thing to push. So two different questions, which is, first of all, if you are a developer listening, how do you get in touch? And then second, for potential lenders.
If you're an SME developer and you're thinking of a project, we've got a 12-box application form on our website. And we took the approach internally. We said, the Churchill quote, sorry for writing a long letter, I didn't have time to write you a short one. Well, we did the short letter version of that, and we cut down the information we require to give an initial view. So developers, within 5 minutes, can put a prospective site or a site that's quite progressed through that form. All our data and analytics fire off the back of that data. All our workflow gets started internally within the business. That's all the good tech stuff. And that all gets pinged in front of an expert human brain. And we will give a view on that within 24 hours. And it's often within a couple of hours. And that view is always, yes, we like it. We'll need to know a bit more, but, you know, proceed with confidence and let's hear more and let's start the dialogue and the relationship. Okay. Then there might be, no, we don't fund that kind of project. We don't do pure commercial, for example, but we might say, oh, there are these guys in the market, you know, just for your information, we don't take a kickback or anything. It's just, you know, it's just a helpful answer because we're giving a no. And the other one is, no, we're not sure about this because we see a number of these issues, okay? And then we have a conversation about it. One of those issues might be mitigated already, but actually the developer hadn't thought of it, the other three, and the costs are underplayed or whatever it is. And we'll say, well, we won't back this. Maybe you should think whether you want to spend your time on it, okay? And that's helpful because, you know, it's not buying a buy-to-let flat, and if it doesn't cash flow, you know, you've got to put a bit of cash in each month, but it's not that active. You know, these guys are going to spend 12 to 18 months working damn hard on this project, okay? Make sure it's the right project. And we will help in that, because if you're able to get to know on a site as quickly as possible, then you can find more.
Yeah, and I guess the data you are building up in-house presumably gives you pretty great visibility on costings, prices.
Yeah.
I guess the more you go on, the bigger your database gets. Yeah,
definitely. They will speak to the decision makers. They will speak to property experts. They will, you know, it will be a journey together, and we'll understand it. We'll work together on it, and we will be quick, easy, efficient, expertise-led. It's a better overall lending product, not just the fact that it's a peer-to-peer lending marketplace.
And for lenders?
Same thing. I mean, our website caters for both sides of our market. You can check out stuff about us, and I particularly love our statistics page, largely because I'm a data geek. But we're very, very open and transparent on that, and leading class leading statistics page. You know, check us out. And then don't stop there. Go and find out what other people say, and go and understand whatever everyone else who has spent quite a lot of time. You know, people like Fourthway, people like Brismo who do independent verification. You know, go and find out about us from them. You know, we say things in an honest way, but there's third party validation. You know, use those resources, and we really urge people to do that. And we're here to answer questions as well.
Cool. Well, I hope some people get in touch. So we're on to our final three questions.
Mm.
First of which is, what is your favourite building?
Oh, St Pancras Station. That's an easy one.
Oh, that really was an easy
one.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I absolutely love it. It's an architectural marvel. And when that got finished, I was just blown away by how it almost felt like sort of, you know, the rejuvenation of Victorian architecture. And it's, incredible, incredible.
Yeah. You know, I'm torn between loving it and then finding the retail element as a retail geek quite frustrating.
Yes.
You can't see what anything is until you're kind of walking past it.
That is right. Well, it's badly signposted.
It's kind of growing on me. You get used to it.
Yeah.
So the second is, can you recommend a book for our listeners to read, which has influenced your career to date?
The best book I've ever read is a book by Robert Cialdini and Steve Martin. It's called Yes, and it's all about the science of persuasion. And so it's sort of how to, it's 50 chapters, okay? And they're scientists that have just sort of said, well, how do you ethically influence the human brain and activity? And so that's an easy one as well.
Manipulating fellow man.
Yeah, it's really important. It's, you know, in a very ethical way. So it's basically understanding human psychology, yeah. And that's fascinating.
It shall be added to our reading list. Thank you. So your final question, which is looking forward to your answer on this one, is which technology business or idea are you most excited about for the kind of future of the built environment?
I am biased on this one as well because I'm an investor in it, but I think what Ask Porter is doing and the sort of the vision there is really interesting. I think that can bring a lot of efficiency.
I should know more about that. That is what a kind of
basically
digital system for residential.
Yeah, exactly. But the principle being, let's, you know, property management is a human resource intensive activity. How do you leverage tech and very easy to say AI, but using AI to make that much more efficient. And there's no accident that that was Google Assistant's first investment in Europe.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us. It's been great 40 minutes.
Pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. Right.
Thanks. Plugging the financing gap in the SME house builder market requires innovation, and ideas like crowd property should be welcomed in this regard. The benefits for the borrower are clear: access to finance, while the lender can also stand to gain. As with all P2P platforms, lenders need to do their research, and it seems logical that having a niche, focused intermediary, sourcing, evaluating, and presenting the opportunities is the easiest way to achieve this at scale. There's a much wider world of alternative finance that beckons for the built environment. But for the time being, nailing down a trusted, efficient P2P platform seems like an excellent start. If you enjoyed today's episode, please do tell a colleague or share a link from the website or on social media. We're also now available to download on partner websites Unisu and Infobode. I shall be back in 2 Fridays' time when I hope you'll join me for a fresh episode of Building Our Future.